Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time. Friday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and well, since it's Friday, you know.
Start spreading the news.
Oh, you know, that means Schomburg Stu is here. How you doing, Stu?
I'm doing okay. Welcome to the wonderful weekend of sports.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess. If that, is that what we're calling it? Wait, tell me what's so wonderful about it besides the fact that I have fantasy football drafts the next 3 days.
Well, you're going to be working hard over the next few days taking care of all your drafts.
I don't know how hard it's where we're actually working this year with everything going on. I don't know anybody who's all that invested as of yet. I'm sure the guys in our money league are, head over heels deep in their books, trying to get everything ready for Sunday. But, you know, other than that, Dan and I talked a little bit about it yesterday, and he hasn't even looked at anything. I've only kind of generally looked at everything, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, there's so much uncertainty that it's hard to really gear up 100% as you normally have done in the past.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just so odd with, obviously we're used to baseball going on, but, you know, you got basketball and football, or not basketball and hockey that are still going to be going on, and it's just, I don't know. I guess it's nice to have all these sports, but in a way it's kind of like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I haven't been paying too much attention to all those playoff games going on, except, of course, I'm extremely interested in what the Sky is doing.
Yeah. Hey, at least they're still playing. You know, that other
right.
Chicago team that got played didn't last very long. So, that was the other thing Dan and I talked about. I realized that I have actually not turned on 1 second of the NBA since they've come back. You know, normally I'll swing by and, get a score or see what's going on, at least with hockey, and I was kind of surprised. If I'd have known it was on earlier, I would have watched it. They have the Avalanche Stars Game 7 already on. It's on the USA Network because they're showing some of their hockey games there. So I watched a little bit of that. But for, the NBA, I lost even more interest than the little interest that I had. It's the only way I can think to describe it.
Yeah, I see little bits and blurbs on the NBA on occasion. I guess that Milwaukee's kind of in trouble. They could be eliminated pretty soon, and that would be a major upset if that happens.
Yeah, I've been keeping up with, I see the highlights and stuff, and, obviously when I'm looking for something to post on sportstimeradio.com, I find the stuff over there. But, yeah, I guess I want to try, but it's just kind of like, I believe the Lakers and the Rockets open tonight, and I keep telling myself maybe as the series get better, because, the opening round series are usually never very good. I know the Rockets and the Thunder did go 7 games, so that was apparently a good series. And, you mentioned, Jimmy Butler and the Heat have been taking it to the Bucks.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
the, you know, long controversy. Game two ended with Butler getting the foul call with no time left and going to the line and winning the game. So that, you know, that's a little controversial because that, you know, there were a lot of people saying that while it was a foul, it wasn't egregious enough to call in that situation. But, you know, even stuff like that didn't interest me. And, I mean, I like Jimmy Butler. I liked him when he was here with the Bulls. And, you know, I to this day, I still don't understand why they got rid of him.
That was a huge mistake on their part. And it'll be costing them for years to come.
Yeah, you know, I get that he's hard on his teammates because he wants everybody to work as hard as he does. But, you know, there was another guy who was really hard on his teammates when he was a Bull, too, and that was a guy by the name of Michael Jordan. Not saying that Jimmy Butler is the same caliber player as Jordan, but there's nothing wrong with getting your teammates to work a little.
Yeah, I always admired that about Jimmy Butler, too. And, there should be more players doing that, but unfortunately, that's the exception rather than the norm in the NBA.
Yeah, it's odd, isn't it, when a hardworking player is looked down upon? You know, that was his ticket out of Minnesota was Karl Anthony Towns, and I believe it was Andrew Wiggins, couldn't get along with them because Butler didn't think they worked hard enough, and he would go after them in practice. So, who, you know, and I get it, you know, well, Wiggins is gone anyways, but Towns is supposed to be a superstar, but who wants a lazy superstar? That isn't going to get you anywhere. And, you know, as you can tell, Minnesota wasn't involved in the bubble. You know, they're not in the playoffs.
No.
So here's Jimmy Butler.
And Butler is almost going to, on his way to leading the Heat to a huge upset, too.
Yeah, so. You know, and I mean, if they can get past the Bucks here, you know, that would put them in line to be able to get into the NBA Finals. You know, they would be just as good as either the Celtics or the Raptors, who they would face. You know, and the Raptors, you never want to say got lucky because, you know, these guys are pros, but, you know, they would be down 3-0 if that guy hadn't hit the three-pointer with time running out.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. And all the playoff games, it's an odd thing. If you look at any of the sports right now, there's such a huge difference when the games are played without fans in the stands. I mean, it really mars from the enjoyment of the game.
Yeah, I don't, you know, it hasn't bothered me too much. You know, I notice it, you know, in baseball a little bit when, you know, like a guy hits a homer or the ball goes out into the stands, you know, foul ball or whatever. But, you know, like it hasn't bothered, well, you know, I haven't watched the basketball, but, you know, with hockey, you don't, you know, you don't really notice the fans because of the plexiglass and stuff. So, you know, I've been able to kind of, you know, deal with that, but, you know, I wonder if it affects the players because I heard somebody saying that with this NBA setup, and it would be the same thing in the NHL, there's really no home court or home ice advantage, you know, because there's no travel involved, you know, nothing like that. You just show up and play.
Yeah, no, I think that of all the sports, maybe the one that's really affected by the lack of fans would be the NBA.
Yeah, you know, and you know, I know they've still been handing out awards. I saw that, you know, Montrezl Harrell was named Sixth Man of the Year today, and I don't remember if it was yesterday or the day before, but Ja Morant won Rookie of the Year. You know, I know in reality everybody wanted to give it to Zion Williamson, but he just couldn't stay healthy enough and didn't play enough, and actually ended up finishing third. Kendrick Nunn of the Miami Heat actually finished ahead of him, which is kind of a surprise. You just figured Williamson would end up second. But I believe Morant got every first place vote but one.
Well, he was an obvious choice. He deserved it. He actually deserved that award. And at least they made the right decision with that one.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know if I don't know who got the other first place vote, because you know I don't know how the voting went. The other awards they did hand out, Nick Nurse won Coach of the Year. He's the Raptors coach. Brandon Ingram, who's on the New Orleans Pelicans now, he was part of the trade with the Lakers. He was voted Most Improved. And then, no surprise, Giannis Antetokounmpo won Defensive Player of the Year. So all they have left to hand out now is MVP. So we'll see which way that goes. And oddly, I couldn't even tell you who the front runner is. I mean, my guess is Antetokounmpo pretty much deserves the win because the playoffs don't count. But you know, I mean, there's always a chance they'll give it to LeBron James just because he's LeBron James.
Well, that wouldn't surprise me, and I'm not really sure he deserves it. Not saying he's not a great player, but as MVP this year, I think there was a few other ones that are more worthy of the award.
Yeah. So, and you know, there are two games tonight. They're actually split tonight. The first game starts in about 20 minutes on TNT. That's where you can see the Bucks and the Heat. And the Mickey Mouse Network has the Rockets-Lakers game. That has a scheduled start of 8 o'clock. So if you're interested, you know, swing on over, check it out. Maybe you could tell me what's going on, because tonight I definitely won't be watching because I have fantasy draft. So, you know, that's not going to have the time there to do that. So.
Well, at least you won't have to aggravate yourself by watching the Cubs and the Cardinals.
Yeah, no, you know, that's, you know, just completely, you know, the Cubs are just completely frustrating for me. And, you know, my biggest concern is that they're going to do something stupid and either get swept or lose 4 or 5 and come out of the weekend not in first place. And
is it a 5-game series or a 4-game series?
It's a 5-game series because they act up some of those games. So it's
I know they have a doubleheader tomorrow.
Yeah. I was looking at it the other day, and I was positive it was 5 games, but now you have me doubting myself. So let me check here and see. But yeah, I thought it was 5.
It needs to be a game Monday also, if that's the case, right?
Yeah, I believe it is the wraparound like that. Come on. Of course, yeah, but, you know, my internet has to slow down because I need it to work right now. So there we go. Look at that. Yeah, we got a game tonight, 2 tomorrow, and then we got Sunday and Monday. So it's a 5-gamer. You know,
well,
I know,
you'll be pleased
I know
to
Jack...
know that the Sunday game will be on your favorite network.
Oh, well, that's good. Yeah, I know Jack Flaherty's pitching for the Cardinals tonight. I didn't see who the Cubs were starting.
Darvish. I believe it's Darvish. So that should be a good pitching matchup tonight.
Yeah, so they have an actual, you know, it looks like at least to start the series they have an actual chance, because they should have, what is it, Darvish, Hendricks, and Lester, or maybe Lester and Hendricks, 1-2-3. You know, game 4 and 5 are out of the question when you're going to run Alec Mills and, you know, either Colin Ray or whoever else is, you know, your fifth starter now that Chatwood and Quintana are hurt. They got no chance in those two games, so they really need to win the 3 when the quality starting pitchers are going. But, you know, they like to choke and not win them as well, so you just never know.
Well, I'm not all that confident anymore in Lester getting the job done. He's been shellacked pretty good this year.
No, but he's better than Alec Mills or Colin Ray.
That is true.
You know, that's kind of how it goes. But, yeah, we had there are surprisingly, let's see, we got 5 doubleheaders today. So there's plenty of baseball. One of them is already final. The Tigers beat the Twins beat the Tigers 2-0 in their first game. I think if I remember it right, the Twins hit 2 solo homers in the first inning, and that was the end of the scoring. So kind of an odd game. The Tigers are actually winning game 2 right now. It's the top of the 6th. They're winning 2-1. The other games that are rolling along, the Yankees are up 4-1 on the Orioles. The Jays are up 8-4 on the Red Sox. The Braves are up 5-1 on the Nationals. And the Reds are up on the Pirates 4-2. So there you go. You're all caught up with your live action for today. And, yeah, you'll get the Nationals, Braves, Yankees, Orioles. Basically every game that's playing right now is a part of a doubleheader. So,
well, we're talking about some of the teams, and I'm quite surprised at how well Detroit's been playing this year. I never expected them to be as competitive as they are.
Yeah, you know, they've made some improvement, you know, and you always kind of wonder, you know, will they hang on, or did they just maybe hit a hot stretch? Because, you know, remember, you know, everybody was in love with the Miami Marlins, and now they're 500 and four games out of the division lead. And I'm not quite sure if they would even qualify for a playoff spot if they were to start. So,
well, you knew that Miami wouldn't last that long, and that's not a surprise.
No, but, you know, everybody was all excited, you know, about it, and Detroit isn't, you know, they're in basically the same rebuilding mode Miami is. But, you know, Detroit is five out. They're five behind Cleveland, you know, and they have just too many teams to jump over to really be considered playoff contenders now, because, you know, Cleveland, the White Sox, and Minnesota are all playing fantastic, and it looks like all three of those teams are going to get in. And this is the AL Central we're talking about, which has kind of been the redheaded stepchild of baseball for the last few years.
Yeah, it's even more competitive this year since the White Sox have become a contender as well. It's always, in previous years, it's been the Twins and Cleveland fighting it out.
Yeah, well, you know, for a while there, it was just Cleveland fighting it out with themselves.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you
that's
know,
true.
Minnesota,
also,
you know, Minnesota has greatly improved the last few years, and you know, now the White Sox are slowly kind of putting it together. You know, so maybe they'll hang on to a playoff spot. That would be nice. Even if they just get the one game wild card, it would be a big step for them. So,
yeah, the White Sox starting pitching scares me a little bit, though.
Yeah, you know, they've got the two guys you can depend on. You got Giolito and Keuchel at the top, and then it's a crapshoot. You know, I mean, they haven't had, you know, like Dylan Cease is hot and cold. He was really good last night, and then the bullpen almost gave the game away.
Yeah.
But, you know, the start before that, I think, was the start. He walked six guys. So, you know, he's young, and you're going to get those up and down performances. So, you know, that's going to happen. But yeah, after that, I mean, you know, Ronaldo Lopez came back from injury and didn't look good, so they sent him down to the alternative site. You know, Carlos Rodon can't stay healthy. I know Gio Gonzalez got hurt. So they're in kind of flux there with those guys. Dane Dunning has had a couple decent outings for him. You know, maybe he'll develop, you know, as the season goes along. But, you know, it's not exactly that playoff rotation you're looking for. But, you know, hey, if they get in, great.
Well, they have a good chance of getting in because of their good offensive lineup, although they have some young players that are really up and down. Now, right now, Jimenez is kind of in a slump, but he was over 300 just a couple of weeks ago, and now he's about 40 points below that. So he is really scuffling right now.
Yeah, you know, and that's, you know, again, that's the issue with, you know, young players. You know, you get, you know, they're going to go through these, you know, these high spots and the low spots. And, you know, as the league learns things about them, you know, they have to figure it out. And, you know, kind of the kind of back and forth that goes with it. So
yeah, well,
we'll, you know, we'll
make adjustments. If you want to stick around in baseball more than a year or two, you've got to make those adjustments, because you know that the pitchers around the league are going to find out very quickly what your strengths and weaknesses are, and they'll make the adjustments, and it's up to the batters then to do the same thing.
So yeah, you know, we'll see how he you know, if and how he can adjust, you know, if and how he can adjust or how it works out. But, you know, you just never, you know, you just never know with guys. You know, he seemed to do okay last year, you know, making adjustments. So I think, you know, I think he'll be okay as it kind of rolls along here. But, yeah, you know, and like everybody else, you know, the important thing is they've got to stay healthy. You know, if they're as long as their guy, you know, their offensive guys stay healthy, they should have a shot at, you know, at least getting in. And, you know, who knows, maybe they, you know, they could win an early round and surprise a team, but
it's possible.
I'm not ready to pick him to go to the World Series or anything like that.
Not quite yet. But yeah, he's not Jimenez is not the greatest outfielder in the world. I always worry about him making a wrong move and getting hurt.
Yeah, you know, and he's had some injury issues. You know, he had some injury issues last year. So, you know, you do kind of got to be careful with him there. You know, I mean, luckily the White Sox have the luxury of being able to plug Adam Engel in as a late inning defensive guy. And, you know, he's a Gold Glove quality defender. And, you know, lucky for them, he's even hitting this year. You know, when he's played, he's actually hitting .290. So, you know, that's an extra plus.
Yeah, he's been quite consistent for them this year.
So yeah, you know, and I mean, Jose Abreu has played so well. There's people pushing him for MVP. So.
Well, this is his best year offensively for the White Sox, I think.
Yeah, probably. You know, I mean, he's always been really consistent. You know, I mean, generally in a, you know, 162 game season, you're going to get, you know, 30 homers and 100 RBIs out of him. So, you know, he just little extra this year seems to be helping out. And, you know,
I think it's because of their winning. He's not used to the team winning. And I think when he saw how good the team could be, how competitive the team could be, he actually elevated his game a little bit.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, obviously that's a plus. He's a guy, you know, they're going to need down the stretch if they're going to do anything. So, you know, we'll have to see how it actually works out for them, or if they can, you know, figure out the pitching staff, you know, is going
right,
to be some
exactly.
of the.
He seems more exuberant to me this year. I mean, he's always been an excellent ball player, but he's got that extra swagger about him that when it comes to playing for a team that's over 500, and they certainly have shown that they could do that this year.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm sure it helps, you know, probably makes it easier to go to the ballpark when you're, you know, your team is winning.
Yeah, and let's assume that the fans are still playing, that there was no problem and the fans are coming out to the park. Would the resurgence of the White Sox this year have given them at least a decent attendance at the ballpark?
No, not now, you know. Well, maybe now, because technically it is September, but it wouldn't have mattered, you know, early in the season. You know, even the year they won the World Series, they didn't start drawing until actually really late in the season, you know, because nobody kind of, you know, was kind of behind them or believed they were going to be able to do it. You know, that's just unfortunately how it goes. I mean, you know, you can go through and, you know, you look at the teams. You know, the Rays are in first place because, you know, they're basically used to playing in front of nobody anyways.
That's
you know,
right.
they just don't, you know, the Indians are in first place. They don't draw. The A's are in first place. They don't draw. You know, the National League, the Braves are in first. They're not a great draw. The only two first place teams that draw are the Cubs and the Dodgers.
And even the Dodgers don't draw as well as they used to years ago.
Yeah, you know, but, you know, they still do well. I mean, they still end up leading baseball in attendance, you know, pretty much every year. So, but, yeah, you know,
year,
I mean, it's just, you know, kind of weird for some of these teams.
And this is one team that's living up to the hype, because don't they have the best one-loss record in the majors right now, the Dodgers?
Yeah, they're number one and Tampa's number two. So, you know,
yeah,
I don't know how.
They've opened up quite a few games on the Yankees now. Are they at least four games ahead of them? Or
I'll have to double check here. I think it was four games yesterday. So let me grab the standings back up here and I can double check. Cause I think, I think Tampa was off and the Yankees won. So it might be a half game less today. Where are we at? Come on. There we go. Currently the Yankees and Toronto are both five back. They have the same record. So, but yeah, Tampa has a five-game lead,
which is pretty impressive. And it's such a crazy season when they're playing. Well, it's not a third, a little more than a third of what they're supposed to play. There's going to be some. There's going to be some crazy things happening when it's all said and done.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, you get to the point with the Yankees where you've really just got to wonder how many injuries are just too many. You know, they just added Jonathan, I believe it's Losiga, who's been filling in the rotation to the IL, and Gio Urshela, their third baseman, was just added to the IL, you know, today. So, you know, you just kind of wonder. I mean, the best news is apparently Gleyber Torres is supposed to be back Sunday, but, you know, there's no return date for, you know, like Aaron Judge or Giancarlo Stanton, you know, or like James Paxton yet, who had the forearm issue. You know, eventually it just gets to the point where, you know, how much is too much, and, you know, it starts to cost them games.
Well, they have a very talented, solid team. But they always seem to.
Yeah.
I mean, this year the injuries have been terrible, terrible.
Yeah, you know, because right now, I mean, they're missing four starters out of their starting nine. You know, because there's a DH, you know, obviously there's a DH everywhere this year. But, you know, so yeah, you know, they're missing, you know, those four guys. You know, Chapman missed a certain amount of time. Then Zach Britton got hurt. He had shelf for 10 days. So, you know, again, it's just to the point where when does it become too much for them to overcome?
Right.
You know, they did it last year.
And Chapman's been suspended now, hasn't he? Hasn't Chapman been suspended for a couple of games?
Three games, but he appealed. So he hasn't served anything yet. At least not that I know of, unless they took care of it, but you never know.
Well, it certainly can be a dangerous situation if he has that reputation of headhunting a little bit, and that's not a guy you want to do that when you're throwing 101 miles an hour.
Yeah, it was it was garbage what he did. You know, I mean, like, and I've mentioned it before here, I have no issue if a pitcher throws at a batter. I understand that it is part of the game, but there is a way to go about it, and you do not go above the shoulders for any reason whatsoever. You know, and in reality, he probably deserved more than three games. You know, I'm sure on appeal it'll come down to two and, you know, all that stuff. But, you know, they probably should have given him, you know, five and then limited it after, you know, he appealed.
When you played in college, did you see any of that? Was there anything like that on? And any of the games did you saw?
Oh, yeah, there's always stuff like that. That starts back in not so much high school, but if you play on the Legion teams or the summer teams, that starts back then. You know, guys will go after somebody for just the oddest thing. I mean, I know one pitcher who threw it again. Well, it actually, there was a Cub who took it to almost a criminal extent at one point in time. I don't know I think it was Ben Christensen who in college hit the guy who was watching him warm up.
And he was in the on-deck circle, right? And then when
he was in the circle. He was up by the plate. He came up by the plate to get a better look, and he ended up hitting him in the head. I know guys who have gotten hit in the batter's box after their at-bat started for doing stuff like that. They were watching the guy warm up to try to pick something up, and the pitcher didn't like it. So he plunked him in the ribs. But yeah, it does happen, and it starts early. I know kids that, the senior level of Little League is 13 through 15. I've actually coached kids, and I know kids who have thrown at other kids that they didn't like. And it's just kind of like, hey, I coached one kid who hit his sister's boyfriend because they were fighting. And I was just kind of like, well, okay, you should have told me, and if it costs us a run, I'm going to take you out of the game. But it didn't, so I was like, okay, you did your thing. Let's just play the game now. It starts at an early age, and I think a lot is because, they see it on TV.
Well, do they realize how dangerous that could be? Because when you get hit with a baseball?
Well, yeah, they've all been hit with baseball, so, they know and they understand. It's just the process of, not going for the head and, trying to make your point. And, you can still make your point by throwing inside. I understand there are times, you feel the need that you got to plunk somebody. And, you just don't do it above the shoulders. That's the bottom line. And Chapman crossed that line.
Yeah. Yeah, and anybody ever come at you head high in college?
Oh yeah, plenty. I've taken, plenty of dirt naps in the batter's box there, getting out of the way of stuff, and and in some cases it's just control. It's just guys who are really legitimately wild. But you question it in other cases, but in high school I had a three homer game, and in my fourth at bat I got hit in the ribs. So I'm assuming
you kind of expected
that
was going to be coming though, right?
Yeah. You kind of get the hint, when those things happen. So
years ago there was an interesting scenario, and this happened a few times. I don't know if it happens so much anymore. A batter gets dusted off, really head high, call it what you will. On the next pitch, he bunts down the first baseline, and the pitcher runs after the ball, and he gets clobbered by the batter. Have you ever heard anything about that? I've seen that happen a few times, but maybe not so much anymore.
Yeah, I've heard of it happening. I've never seen it or played in a game or anything like that where it's happened. Obviously there's always scenarios where, guys get run over. I mean, I've seen sadly just hundreds of first basemen get wiped out trying to, save some wild infield throw.
Right.
I've heard of that scenario, and I understand it. That's a nice way to get even. You get the guy running your way, and then you got basically a free shot at him. So, we saw it a couple years ago in the World Series. Remember Manny Machado intentionally stepped on a guy at first base.
Yeah,
I don't remember if it was the pitcher or the actual first baseman, but he stepped on a guy. So, those kind of things still happen, just I don't think too often anymore.
No, certainly it has toned down a little bit over the years, that's for sure.
And I know baseball has tried to legislate a lot of that out. I mean, obviously, you're limited on how you can slide into second base. You can no longer intentionally run over the catcher. So, they've done what they can to kind of, to limit a lot of that. There's still ways to, kind of get it done. And, you just got to hope when you run the pitcher over going down the first base line, it doesn't look too intentional and you don't lose any games for it. So, the last thing a team needs to be suspended.
Yeah. Well, who had a reputation of coming in spikes high and in the second base was Ty Cobb. who was a very nasty ball player.
Yeah, well, from what I heard, he was just a, you know, from what I've heard and read, he was just a nasty individual.
All the way around, right?
Just wasn't a nice person.
No. Well, see the guy, by the way, that early on bought a lot of shares of Coca-Cola. I thought that was a player who did that, became a multimillionaire because of it.
It's possible. I don't know if it was him, but, you know, it wouldn't surprise me. So,
but as
I'm not sure if there's a way.
He was a very nice human being, but he was a great ball player.
Oh, yeah, you know, one of the best to ever play the game, but, you know, yeah, as, you know, far, you know, and, you know, unfortunately, you know, there's, you know, well, what's the thing they always say? Don't meet your heroes, right? So.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
You know, so I apologize to anybody who ever met me as a wrestler if I was mean to you. I didn't mean to be. I'm genuinely a nice guy, so.
That was when you were in heel mode, right?
Yeah, well, you know, that's how it used to be. You know, when you were a heel, you weren't supposed to go out and talk to the fans and sign autographs. You know, of course, that's all changed now. No, you know, nobody cares. But that was the thing, you know, for the longest time was you protected the business, and heels weren't allowed to do that.
Yeah, and what happens is,
you know, which of course,
a lot of times the heel and the face would get into a car and go on a trip to the next town, and there would be maybe some people would notice them and say, hey, how come you guys are in a car together? When you're wrestling each other in a cage match the next night.
Yeah, well, I remember one of the time that happened. One of the last times that happened was in WWE when Hacksaw Jim Duggan and the Iron Sheik were in a car together and got pulled over because the cops saw them lighting up a joint. So
yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
But yeah, no, you know, and that used to be, you know, rules when you were wrestling places. And, you know, originally before, you know, Vince McMahon exposed the business, you actually had separate locker rooms and you couldn't go over your matches move for move like these guys do now. You would see the guy before a show, you would talk to him for a few minutes, and then you would go into, you know, the good guys in their locker room, the bad guys in their locker room. You wouldn't see him again until you got in the ring.
Yeah, no. Of course, that hasn't happened in a long time now.
And, you know, that's what limited a lot of, like, the high spots we see today. You know, that would have never happened because you wouldn't have been able to put that together in the ring because you could have never called a match like that. You know, you couldn't say, okay, well, you know, I'm going to moonsault you and then roll out of the ring and I'll jump over the ropes on you. Yeah, that wouldn't have happened.
No. Right. In general, though, does the heel call a match more than the face?
Yeah. In general, the heel calls the majority of the match. Obviously, the face is going to call his moves when he takes over. So, you know, the guy knows what's coming. You know, but like a lot of the basic stuff, you don't even call. If you're just wrestling and exchanging holds, there's no need to call them. You know, because you should all know what you're doing. It's just the big stuff. I mean, you don't want to shoot a guy off the rope and have him think you're going to hip toss him when you're really going to clothesline him. You know, because again, you know, you don't want to hurt anybody seriously. You know, it's going to hurt enough when they take the bump on the mat. You don't need to take their head off with a clothesline. So
there's stories that Buddy Rogers, when he was a younger wrestler, did that. He would the wrestler, his opponent would be expecting him to make a certain move, and he would double-cross him and potato him. But supposedly he mellowed when he got a little bit older. Didn't do that anymore.
Yeah, you know, I mean, just like anything, there are those guys that are just jerks. You know, unfortunately, you know, there's no other way to put it. You know, and I mean, like, I've seen guys legitimately get into fights in the locker room after their match was over because of stuff, you know, a guy was trying to pull.
Those skirmishes in the locker room are probably more intense than what happened in the ring.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they get real serious. You know, I had one guy, now, you know, not naming any names because he still wrestles locally. He didn't want to lose to me. So when it was his turn to pin me, he would put all his body weight on me, hoping that I wouldn't kick out in time. You know, instead of just covering me and giving me an opportunity to get an out, he would lay fully on me with all his weight. not realizing that, you know, at one time I almost benched 500 pounds and throwing him off me wasn't that big a deal. But yeah, that was just his way of, you know, because he, you know, and again, he just, again, this is professional wrestling we're talking about, and he didn't want to lose. So.
Yeah, I guess the thing is, theoretically, that you don't care if you win or lose, as long as you look good in the ring and it was a good match between you and your opponent. But some guys don't always do that, think that way, do they?
You know, unfortunately, the theory behind it is if you go out and you guys have a really good match, 70% of the fans will not remember who won or lost. The people who are going to remember are your family and friends. Those are people who are going to remember when you won or lost because they're going to tease you about it. But a general wrestling fan is just going to go, oh, yeah, they had a great match. I remember that. But they genuinely don't remember who won. They just remember they saw a great match and they want to buy a ticket to the next show.
Well, that's the way
it
should be.
For whatever reason, you know, there's always those wrestlers that just can't get that through their thick skulls.
And this works even on the independent level as well as the big leagues in professional wrestling, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, unfortunately, you know, there are guys at the highest level, you know, now WWE, AEW, you know, ROH, Impact, wherever you go, that probably still don't like or want to lose matches. So, you know, that, you know, I mean, you know, for years, Hulk Hogan had it written into his contract that he had full booking control. So he never lost to anybody.
Yeah, and in the days before the business was exposed, when I know you wrestled some big names, and some cases you mentioned that they didn't want to do the job, even though that no one would know about it. I mean, it was a local local non-televised event, and they still wouldn't want to do a double count out or anything else. And they had to win the match, and you couldn't book the guy because of his stubbornness.
Yeah, you know, the biggest guy we had that problem with, and unfortunately he just recently passed away, was Kamala. You know, I was being managed by, you know, a gentleman by the name of P.L. Myers, who is still on the indie circuit in the, you know, Illinois, Indiana area. And he reached out to him, and he explained what we wanted to do. You know, they agreed on a payday. You know, they agreed on what type of hotel we would put him up at, because, you know, you fly him in, they spend the night, they fly out the next day. You know, and then when it came to the match content, well, you know, he explained that, I needed to win because of what we were doing with the angle we were going at. And for whatever reason, he just flat out refused. You know, he didn't want to be pinned. Obviously, I couldn't submit him. He wouldn't even let me beat him by count out. You know, so then it was like, well, okay, how about you get disqualified? Well, no, he didn't want to do that either. You know, and for whatever reason, he just had to win. And, you know, PL mentioned to him, you know, the guy you're wrestling has been in the business, I think it was 18 or 19 years at the time. You know, it's like, so he's not some new green kid or anything like that. And he explained to him the angle we were doing with, you know, PL and the Chicago connection and how we had everything set up. And he just flat out refused to lose the match, and we couldn't book him.
And when this took place, this is long after he had his big heyday in the WWE, right? Just doing independent bookings then?
Yeah, I think they brought him back for kind of a short comedy run, but it was nothing major. I mean, he was only there, I don't even think he was there a year when he went back. You know, he just made some appearances and did some comedy and had a couple silly matches. But, yeah, no, he wasn't doing the big heel run anymore or anything like that. He was well past those days. He was just taking his, you know, $700-$800 to come out and do matches on the weekends.
So he turned out a nice gig, a nice amount of change, accommodations, and transportation just because he didn't want to do the job.
Yeah. You know, and the strange thing about it is, like, everybody else I talked to who has booked him and used him never had any problem with him, But then again, I don't know if they asked him to lose. You know, that never came up.
Well, maybe,
so,
maybe they were booking him to win, so he didn't.
Yeah.
And that's what he was looking for.
Yeah, you know, in a lot of cases, you know, that's the deal. I mean, if you're bringing these guys in, they're going to win. You know, like we've had guys actually insist to lose to one of our guys to help the promotion out. So, you know, they were like, no, you know, let your guy win because, you know, it'll be better for your promotion if, you know, he goes over. Your fans will get into that a little more. But, yeah, you know.
Well, you got to give a lot of credit to those guys who had performed on a high level and with major organizations, willing to come into a local organization, independent organization, and do a job just to help the people out. And that, you got to say a lot for those kind of wrestlers.
Well, you know, and the one thing I learned about those guys is it was all the guys who came through ECW that were willing to do that. So I think they kind of understood because, you know, ECW was that promotion that just started from the ground up. You know, they were a minor independent for, you know, a long time. And they were just Eastern Championship Wrestling until, you know, Heyman took over and they did the big thing with Shane Douglas. So I think a lot of those guys understood that this is how you grow and build a promotion. And, you know, they didn't mind getting pinned. You know, they were getting a good payday, you know, putting up in a decent hotel, in some cases a really nice hotel. So, you know, they didn't care.
Yeah, well, that does show a lot for those guys. Were you surprised, by the way, that that Randy Orton did a clean job for this, trying to put this new wrestler over, what is it, Keith Lee, on a pay-per-view a week or two ago?
Yeah, I was surprised, but you know, then I was reading that apparently Lee is supposed to be the next superstar. So, you know, they want to keep him clean and make him look good and you know, all that stuff. And you know, so far, I mean, you know, he's been able to prove it. He's a fantastic athlete for his size. You know, I've seen him in their NXT brand. So, you know, they may have something there if they handle it correctly. But, you know, to be honest, that's a big if there.
A very big if. And, yeah, I've seen him once or twice. He looked like he's moves pretty well for a big wrestler. He goes, what, over 300? He's over 300.
Yeah, definitely 350. He's probably in that range. And he, you know, yeah, the things he can do are really amazing for someone that size.
Yeah, there's a few of them who were like that. I remember the late AWA wrestler Jerry Blackwell, who did really amazing things for a guy his size. He was over 400 pounds, would you say? And he was able to do drop kicks and which you don't usually see from an athlete that big.
No. Hey, to be fair, Big Daddy Rack and I, when we were teaming, used to do the double drop kick, just like Ricky and Robert. All right. So.
All right. I didn't know that was one. You know, I've only seen you a few times in the ring, but I don't remember seeing you do a drop kick. But that's impressive.
No.
That's an impressive move.
No, what actually happened is I tagged him in the very first time it happened. We were in Oshkosh. There were maybe a couple hundred people there. We pushed the guy back in because we were going to do a double team move. He looked at me and he goes, "Double drop kick," and I'm like, "Oh my God, you're kidding me!" So we did it, and it went over great. So we just kept doing it.
Now, were the opponents aware that you guys were going to do that, or was this kind of improvised?
No, he called it when he pushed the guy back into the ropes because
okay.
You know, we had the guy looked at me and he said double drop kick, and you know, since he was telling me, obviously the guy could hear it, and it was just. Oh, and, you know, and to be fair, he got a lot higher than I did. I don't think I got above the guy's shoulders. You know, he actually had a genuine drop kick, but he was a better athlete than I was. But, you know, I mean, the fans popped for it, so it's something, you know, you pull out.
Yeah, I always wonder about the wrestler who does the drop kick getting hurt because he falls back on the ground. But I guess he knows how to do it to distribute his weight properly so he doesn't get injured.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a couple ways to do it, and I, you know, I know you're not a big fan of the women's matches, but if you ever watch the women, they do it differently to where they land on their backs most of the time. You know, the guys are more to the side, but the women do it where they actually land on their backs. So there are different versions of how you're going to drop kick, and I know a lot of guys, when they're doing it off the middle or top rope, will also land on their back just because it's a safer platform. You know, it's better to land that way. So,
well, that's the important thing, and you want to avoid injuries. And with this current style of professional wrestling, it's hard to avoid getting injured because of all the amount of high spots these guys do.
Yeah, I'm really shocked there's not more injuries with, you know, just some of the stuff I've, you know, I mean, just watch one episode of AEW and you wonder why they have anybody left wrestling.
Yeah, they seem to have a hard-nosed style. But I always wonder when there's so many two counts, near falls during the course of a 10-minute match.
Well, you know, my biggest complaint with stuff like that is, you know, I get it. It's exciting, and, you know, it's nice to see these guys with their, you know, their athleticism, because, you know, they're really a lot more athletic than what wrestlers used to be, or at least they show it now. But, you know, it drives me crazy where, you know, I'll watch a guy get beat with a chair, he gets put through a table, he gets nailed with something off the top rope, and he continues to kick out, and then they roll him up and he gets pinned. And
yeah,
I'm like, really?
There's a credibility factor. And years ago when Buddy Rogers got a figure four on an opponent, or Ric Flair in his heyday, the match is over. The guy submitted. Now they crawl towards him. Now they just manage to crawl over and move and move and move until they finally lay against the ropes, causing a break. It never was that way years ago. Never.
No, you know, and that, you know, and that's, you know, that's the other thing now is, you know, just because a guy hits a finisher doesn't mean the match is over.
No.
You know, and a lot of times they hit multiple finishers before a match is over. And it's just like, really, you know, I mean, just the, you know, the insane amount of punishment that you're, you know, you have to suspend belief is what they like to say when you're watching wrestling.
Yeah.
It's too much now. They've kind of lost it.
And how long do you think this has been going on? Would you say, what, 5-10 years they've been doing these things and multiple finishes, not being successful, and near falls and kickouts?
Yeah, at least, you know, it may be even a little longer. You know, I'm trying to, you know, kind of think back and just remember, you know, like who was the first guy that, you know, kicked out of the pile driver when the Undertaker gave it to him, because that was the big thing for a while. You know, but yeah, it's been happening for way too long. I mean, when you hit a guy with a move that looks like it killed him and he kicks out, then how does that move beat somebody else? I've always kind of wondered that.
Yeah, exactly. I'll give an example how it's different. I was watching a match years ago, and the old Dumont Network, and of course anybody besides me knows that the Dumont Network was an old network, long defunct, and they used to have wrestling matches for Miracle on there every Saturday night. Anyway, one of the main events was with Pat O'Connor, of course, former NWA champion, great wrestler. Came in second in the Pan Am Games, and so he's a legit wrestler. Yeah, he's going to come up with a new hold, Jack Brickell said, a pile driver. Well, he did the pile driver on his opponent, and he was stretchered out of the ring. And as each week went by, well, this time he wasn't stretched out. He staggered to his feet, finally with help got away from and was able to leave back to the dressing room. This went on and on, and finally they said, well, Pat O'Connor was afraid to injure someone like this, so he modified the hold so it wouldn't stun his opponent quite as bad. But imagine getting carted out on a pile driver compared to what happens nowadays.
Yeah, well, no, I remember when I was a really you know, young and gullible fan, and they had Georgia Championship Wrestling on every week. Ted DiBiase actually pile drove, I believe it was Terry Gordy on the floor. Or it might have been the opposite way. DiBiase, I think, was the guy who got pile driven on the floor. And he was gone for weeks. I mean, I legitimately thought something was wrong with him. I mean, in reality, he was touring Japan and they had to write him out of the storyline. But yeah, I mean, I honestly thought he was dead.
Yeah.
You know,
and yeah,
they put
the
necklace on him and stretchered him out, and I was like, oh my God. So
that can be actually a legitimately devastating hold if not done properly. Wasn't there one match? I'm trying to remember. I think Owen Hart may have been involved, and he didn't really know the pile driver too well, and he gave it to his opponent who was partially paralyzed because of it, because of a botched pile driver. I don't know if you remember that story or not.
He actually was the one who ended Steve Austin's career with that pile driver.
Yeah.
He did it incorrect. And, you know, the weird thing is, you know, Owen is generally considered one of the better workers. So,
and
you know, for all
so
the
too, yes.
that to happen.
That one he really botched. If you ever watch The Undertaker's pile driver closely, you can see that the opponent's head doesn't really hit the ground.
Right. So,
that's the way you're supposed to do it.
Right. You know, what really helps is if your opponent has long hair.
Yeah.
You know, then it looks like you killed him. So, but yeah, it's an interesting, you know, just a little fact of trivia. That's actually how I lost my very first match. I was pile driven. So.
Oh wow, they were able to get you up there and do that because you're not a lightweight and enough strength.
It was. I'm trying to remember. He was. The guy had a mini push in Georgia as a guy. I think he wrestled as was he the Terminator or something like that? You would know him if you saw him because he was he popped up on TV quite a bit. But yeah, he was a Windy City guy that used to team with the owner, and he was my first singles match. And they had told me he probably wouldn't use that as a finish because of my size. But after we wrestled, you know, after he squashed me for about 5 minutes, he realized he could pick me up. He goes, "All right, well, here we go." I was like, "Oh, okay." So,
well, there is a technique so where you can help your opponent when he has to do a body slam or a pile driver, so it'll actually work out properly.
Yeah, you know, and it's all about your training. I mean, you know, as long as you're trained right, you can. You know, you can protect, you know how to protect yourself from these moves. So, you know, even if something goes wrong, you know, you're not killing yourself or paralyzing yourself or anything like that. And unfortunately, that's part of the problem with the business today is, you know, you get these kids that think just because they do the moves in the backyard, they know how to do them, or, you know, they go someplace where the guy training isn't really legitimate. You know, that happens far too often, especially in the Chicago
baseball.
So.
Well, you're talking about the owner with Sam DeCiro, and didn't he wrestle for the Bruiser for a while in the WWE out of Indianapolis as Supermax? Or was it Mad Max? One of those two.
I can't remember which one he was, but yeah, he was Supermax and his partner was Mad Max. And they had a little run there and then a little run for Vern before Vern moved out to Vegas and started doing everything there. So, but yeah, he owned Windy City for the longest time. There's also the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. So feel free to look me up on Twitter. I'm at Sports Time, and that's URKTIME. If you stop on and listen to the Sports Time, I thank you for doing that with me. So remember, the podcast is available.